Okay, then the next one we're going to move on to is measure 1664. And I believe, Dr. Pating, you're on the line, correct?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Can you give us a brief description of the measure or any overarching issues that you found when reviewing this measure?
Well, this seemed to be the RT of the ESPERT initiative, so the referral to treatment. And it was interesting that it was broken into two portions. The measure basically looks at before or at the time of discharge, that there is a referral to either psychosocial or prescribing of medications. And then because of high refusal rates to accept referral to treatments, the developers developed a prescribed medications measure as a subset of that. It had the same numerators and denominators as previous indicators that we saw. And so I don't know if we'll need a lot of discussion on that. The issues are with reliability and validity. There was a problem with the reliability with regards to referral treatment. In terms of the audits, there was 85% agreement around alcohol and drug diagnosis, 78% about the appropriateness or whether they qualified as receiving medications, and then 62% with regarding referral to treatment. And the issue appears to have been, I know a little bit visual here, was about whether there was a definition, I think, of whether people were involved in a continuum of care. My guess is what was treatment. There also was a question that I had regarding the validity of the measure. The mean score seemed much less than I would typically suspect for this population. There was those that received brief intervention had a mean score of 5.6% got referred. The non-screening was 2.9. The VA got 1.2. So this kind of like non-intuitive direction of ability to refer to treatment. And then more importantly, that the range between hospitals is quite far. So that, for me, raised questions about the usability of this measure in terms of, I always think of the Tomicron compared to what. So what would you be comparing, in terms of using this? And the usability section did not offer a lot of clarity in terms of how this would be used. Would it be intra-hospital quality programs or as a public measure? And then lastly, usability issues. I did have questions still about the, as long as I asked earlier, the cognitive impairment. For me, that was just sort of not part of a typical data set, and so it would be creating a new data set item in a way that seemed rather important. And then there was also a question raised at the end that it looked like, and I guess I would ask the developers to answer. And I had probably more questions than I had, definitely landing in certain boxes here, was because 31% did not accept referral, it looks like a second part of the study was waiting to be validated. I wasn't quite clear about that when I read that. Those are my overall highlights. So again, starting from some real validity measures that just weren't apparent in the other two that we reviewed so far.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Pating, for that overview. So we will start again with the importance to measure and report. Is there anything that anyone else would like to add about this criterion? Again, it's a threshold criterion that must be met in order to recommend the measure. So if there's anything anyone wants to say around the population or the measure specifications, feel free, or any of the evidence that was presented, go ahead.
This is Mady. Regardless of all of the issues about studying this and some of the things David said, which I really resonate with, I really don't see how one can, in an inpatient hospital setting, in which a patient receives a diagnosis, because according to the specifications, this is patients who are diagnosed with dependence or abuse, I believe. Can't remember. I don't see how you cannot either offer medication or a referral to treatment, whether or not it was turned down or accepted. Somehow or other, that not doing that, not offering, would seem to me almost to border on malpractice. I just don't see how one can do that with a diagnosed patient. So that's where I'm at.
So this measure is designed to improve the precision of those identification interventions. I think that the questions that Dr. Pating raised are more about the feasibility of getting an accurate capacity to an accurate measure of the follow-up and referral.
The follow-up is the next one.
Well, referral, even getting measure of referral.
You mean, prescription.
Yeah.
You can't get that measure.
That's one of the questions,
saying.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, that's a usability question,
yeah,
down the road.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I thought we were still back in the beginning of the measure, but
yes,
okay.
I'm sorry.
Talking about usability, I suppose somebody could not do it and check the box that they did do it. But that's true of all the measures,
mm-hmm,
isn't it? Isn't it true of screening or brief intervention?
I think we'd have to, or I'll have to agree with that.
They could lie. That's true.
So, going back to what the work group said, back to importance, it was the majority did agree, deemed to be an important area to measure and report, so it would have passed this criterion. So if there's no more comments around the importance, then we'll go ahead on to scientific acceptability. Okay, so going on to scientific acceptability, particularly reliability and validity, the extent to which the measure as specified produces consistent and credible results about the quality of care when implemented. Did anyone, I believe that Dr. Pating did make a few excellent points, so I don't know if you want to speak to those again, Dr. Pating, or if anyone would like to comment on what he mentioned about the reliability and validity.
Well, this is Nancy, and there were so many comments that perhaps, you know, maybe it would help me too if we could just kind of maybe go through each one of the issues. But the one that I can speak to at least right now as far as the reliability related to the referral for addictions treatment had to do with, you know, this measure, we want to make sure that referral is made for the person before they leave the hospital, that they're just not, you know, given a number to call and you leave it to the patient to do themselves, because we know that that's probably not going to happen. And so we expect that the provider will do that for the patient before he leaves the hospital. And that was the main issue with the reliability on the referral piece, that oftentimes hospitals would say, yeah, you know, we referred the person, but that referral was not made before the patient left the hospital. So that was the piece. That's why the reliability there is a little bit lower. And then if we could just go walk through the other issues, because I had a hard time following them, and I couldn't really, if I can address them where I see what I've written, then maybe I can address the concerns.
Nancy, this is Eric. One other issue I believe that you had reported was that the technical advisory panel did not feel that a referral, simply a referral to go to AA or go to NA was a sufficient referral for follow-up treatment.
That's correct.
Some hospitals recorded that they recommended the patient go to AA, and that was considered non-compliant, even though they had measured it as compliant.
That's correct.
Yes, but I think that the notion that AA as treatment is widely held in the community, even in the healthcare provider community. So, Nancy, do we have, and I don't have the definitions ahead of me, do we actually, have we spelled out what a referral should, the elements that should be included in the referral?
Yeah, we do. So let me take this data element and read it to you. It just says, documentation that a referral was made at discharge for addictions treatment by a physician or non-physician, such as nurse, psychologist, or counselor. A referral may be defined as an appointment made by the provider either through telephone, contact, fax, or email. The referral may be to an addictions treatment program, to a mental health program, or a mental health specialist for follow-up for substance use or addictions treatment, or to a medical or health professional for follow-up for substance use addiction.
Thank you.
And the again, the exclusion is the AA is an exclusion to this.
Yeah. Good. So, I think it, you know, as this conversation is pointing out, that the devil's in the detail here in terms of, you know, people are doing some kind of referral, but it's not good referral, and that's if this measure can move us in the direction of better discharge planning, and
absolutely,
you know, that would be terrific. And then, so we're trying to understand, I guess, is it going to do that? Because again, it depends on if you're requiring them to do the things that we think they have to do. So you mentioned making a telephone call or fax or email. So does communication have to happen with an outpatient or a subsequent provider in order for this to be considered a referral?
Actual communication.
Yeah. Does the person have to, like, communicate with another and transfer the records and set up the appointment? Or is it enough just to say, okay, here's a doctor in your area?
No, you can't just say here's a doctor in your area. You have to really you have to set up the appointment for them so that you know, that's all set before the patient leaves the hospital.
Okay,
now it can be, and here's another interesting thing in this measure that you know, we're referring them for continuing treatment. Now, that treatment, even if you refer to, you know, another mental health specialist or whatever, that specialist could come into the hospital and begin those treatments while the patient is still in the hospital and continue after the patient leaves. Or it can happen, you know, the appointment is made and the additional counseling takes place after the patient leaves. Either way. Just as long as that referral is made and something, you know, is going to get started for the patient.
And this is Eric.
I think that's
something
very important.
Something I think is particularly strong in this, speaking as a developer, is that we also specify that it can be a medical or other healthcare provider for the purpose of providing addiction treatment.
Yeah,
so it would cover buprenorphine or other medical treatments.
That was particularly good.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Eric. So what if you see you actually see a psychiatrist or a counselor in the hospital, and the person says, I'm going to follow up with my sponsor, and I'm okay, don't worry about it. Is that a refusal, or is that a positive because they're going to go to AA, or is that even an appropriate referral when if the consult says, okay, why don't you get back to your program and do what you need to do?
I think AA was considered excluded.
I believe
no,
that.
It's, okay.
Well, it's not so much that in AA was excluded because it's not considered best clinical practice as treatment, but a very helpful adjunct.
Right.
Sure. Yeah, we all agree with that.
And to what extent are you going to capture whether the medical record or some summary of it was transferred as well? Is that part of this?
Can you do that?
I'm sorry, I can barely hear. Could you say the question again?
Okay, sorry. This is Tammy Mark. I'm wondering about the issue of the transfer of the medical record or some summary of it.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. That's not really part of this measure, but certainly an important issue, and maybe one that, you know, when you think about the continuum of care, another measure that probably could be spawned off from this to make sure that, you know, all the appropriate information gets to the next provider. But this measure just simply deals with the that the referral is made.
Okay, thank you.
So can I just ask, in terms of the reliability of the referral to addiction treatment at 62%, do you have suggestions of how that could be improved? Is that just really a question of the instruction set, then, you think, that needs to go out with this, but that needs to be modified over time?
I think it's gonna get better over time. I think that people are not used to, you know, making these referrals to begin with, and it's easy, you know, to just give somebody. We've seen it in a lot of our measures, like the VTE measures and others, where we expect there to be a referral, you know, following discharge to get some type of treatment or care afterwards. And so the expectation to actually make the appointment is something that they're not used to doing. And so I think that, again, like any measure, this is going to drive people to actually begin to do this so that, you know, there is better follow-up and, you know, these people will get into treatment. And are not just left to their own devices to get this done. I just think it's going to take time, and we are prescriptive about it in the specifications. The problem I think that you have with these things is that, you know, a lot of people just don't read the detail of the specifications, and so it's a learning curve.
Yeah, once measures get put in place and some accountability and public accountability is required,
right,
that shifts things considerably.
It does.
Okay.
Also, all of these can be built into an EHR.
Yes,
where
I think
you have
great
a step logic into it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any other comments around the validity or reliability?
The issue of the validity, the question of the, I'm just going to try to find it here, comparing of the hospitals and the ranges of the results. We had a mean of 5.6 and a range of 0 to 15. So I'm just wondering, how does that, you know, play out when you have a range of 3 times the mean in terms of inter-facility comparisons and stuff like that? I guess that's more of a usability at a later point.
Are you on what section are you on? If you can tell me the section. Is this the testing results for validity?
Yeah, the testing results.
Okay, I'm just looking at. So the measure ratings here with respect to clarity, usability, interpretability, is that what you're talking about?
One is testing for results. Look, hold a minute, and find it. No, I didn't make this up. 2B5.3 results.
2B5.3. I'm gonna. Okay.
And it's in the section, identification of meaningful differences in performance.
Oh, meaningful differences in importance. Okay, and then are you talking about the dot plot? The dot plot analysis?
There's two parts. One is these baselines that
right.
you had which seem to be counterintuitive. One is that the spread is not that great and the rates are so low. I mean, and then the VA rate just seems really counterintuitive. So I'm wondering, is there something in systems, the way they're capturing this, that would really throw a big confound? Because I just assumed the VA as a, you know, because they have the DOD protocol, right? That's what they're supposed to do.
Yes.
They should have the highest referral rate, but they have the lowest here at 1.2. And then between the hospitals, you just have this huge range, and so you're going to have, you know, a scatter plot that just looks like a mess when you try to compare, you know, apples to oranges.
Yeah, although, you know, the good thing, well, not the good thing about it, but there is tons of variability, so lots of room for improvement here. And I think that's, you know, basically what I was trying to show with the dot plot is that, you know, obviously we have a lot of room for improvement. And so I guess I looked at it a little bit differently.
But I do have to agree that that does weaken reliability somewhat, the heterogeneity of all those responses.
And this is Eric. There may be a need to, at some point, to do risk adjustment once we have more experience with the measure. There is reasonable evidence from literature reviews that the prevalence of alcohol use disorders varies substantially by type of condition of inpatients. So the trauma care is going to be much higher than general med surge, which will be higher than OBGYN.
Yes, and I think that you're actually underlining an important point that maybe we didn't discuss in the full salience of it. And that is, this is really any alcohol or drug use disorder, not just what we would consider to be, if we put risky drinking in there, if we look at it simply as abuse or dependence,
right.
We're going to see wide variation right along among those three.
Is just on the dependence, the abuse and dependence.
Abuse.
Yeah,
and dependence.
The risky behavior isn't included in this, but the abuse and dependence is.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, if there aren't any other comments from the reliability and validity, we'll go ahead and move on to the usability section, which
I believe... Can I just ask you a question about the abuse issue? Because this is actually my system with regard to HEDIS. I mean, not all abuse requires a referral to treatment. You know, you have one DUI, and you do get in an accident, but there may be reasons that that doesn't require a referral to treatment or abuse. So I could see this as dependent. I have a little questions about whether we're lumping too broadly there. My belief is for strict abuse, I mean, then you have to look at some of the qualified as the expert. I mean, just the screening and brief intervention might be adequate without the formal referral if they didn't meet, some sort of clinician or moving.
Yeah.
Yes, but if they meet criteria for abuse, if they meet the DSM criteria for abuse, best clinical guidelines would require that they be referred. If you're talking about incidents of binge drinking, in which case DWIs might emerge, that's not really meeting the criteria for abuse.
Problem? You don't think that? Well, the problem is clinicians are coding that as abuse.
Yeah.
It's more complicated when DSM-5 comes out, you know?
Yes.
Substance, whatever, 1 to 10. Does everyone get a referral to treatment, you know, based on this? So I do think it's not now, but that's a later thing that we would have, that we should consider when we start to look at what the numerator or the denominator is.
Okay, any other comments around the scientific acceptability? Okay, so the usability criteria and the extent to which intended audiences can understand the results of the measure and are likely to find them useful for decision making. And it appears that we had the majority had ranked this as moderate with two highs and then another low. Any comments around the usability? I know we talked about it a bit with the use of the checkbox, but if there's any other comments. Okay, and if there's nothing else about usability, we'll move on to feasibility. The extent to which the required data are readily available, retrievable without undue burden, and can be implemented for performance measurement. I know we also talked about this a little bit, but does anyone else have any comments around the feasibility? And it appears for feasibility that the majority of the work group rated this as moderate with one high and one low. Again, for someone who wasn't, David, I believe that you had made a comment about this on your survey tool. Is there anything you wanted to add?
It's really that cognitive impairment question that's been kind of plaguing throughout, and I mean, I'm satisfied with that. And the hard part was basing this on the data that was provided in the application. These conversations definitely help.
Okay, great. Any other comments on the feasibility? Go ahead.
This might be kind of a naive question, but how does this relate to the hospital-based inpatient psychiatric core measures?
Fair
question, Tammy.
I don't know that much about them, but I was reading recently that there's some measures related to post-discharge continuing care plan has been created, and that the post-discharge continuing care plan has been transmitted to the next level of care upon discharge.
Nancy, can you speak to that?
I am not that familiar with the HBIPS measures, but I'll tell you what I'll do is I will, get with the lead for that measure. Your question is, how does this measure relate to that measure set in general or similar measures in that set, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Why don't I come to the meeting in April prepared to address that for you?
Okay,
yeah, that's
important.
Okay.
This is Eric. The HBIPS hospital discharge planning, the data gathering that would be necessary to do for that would immediately and easily fit into the sub-3.
Yeah. I mean, there seems to be some potential synergy.
Yeah, there does.
And the other measures, frankly, can be pulled from administrative data. Did you have a diagnosis? Did you have medications or a psych service that was provided inpatient?
Can I ask one last question on the feasibility? On 4D, it says 31% of enumerator refused, and then refusals were not. But then there's something about, I didn't quite understand what this was referring to. Sampling was not allowed during the pilot test, so sufficient data collected during the 6-month pilot test. What's that referring to exactly? Why these people refused, or what was needing to be followed up on here?
This is in 4D.
Uh-huh.
Describe what we learned. Let me see. It's just I'm just talking. I'm just talking in general about what did we learn during the pilot test. And one of the things that we like to look at, if we can, is sampling methodology, especially in a global measure set where it applies to all patients. And that's something that's been new for us as we've moved from targeted diagnosis-specific measures into more global measure sets that are more global in nature that apply to all patients. And so sampling is something that, we would have liked to have learned something about in the pilot test, but we just really weren't able to do that. And so that's all that comment meant.
Okay.
Any other comments before we move on to 1665?
Oh, one note about the... and just so that the steering committee has a context, there is also another measure that is discussed in the forum. It's 004, and that's the alcohol measure that we'll be discussing at the end, initiation and engagement of alcohol and other drug dependence treatment. And we'll be discussing that in full at the in-person committee, but we want to make sure that you have that in mind as we discuss the rest of the measures.
Okay, and just a brief time check. We have about a half hour left and two more measures to go through. So go ahead and get started on 1665. That was assigned to Mady and Tammy, so I don't know which one of you would like to go ahead and lead that off.
Tammy, you want to lead it off?
Okay, sure. So this is looking at the number of patients who are discharged whose screen positive for unhealthy alcohol use or received a diagnosis of alcohol or drug use disorder or contacted within 30 days. I guess I'll just focus quickly on some of my concerns about this measure. I thought the evidence of the effectiveness of this post-discharge 30-day contact was weak. They cited a study by Jackson and Booth and Bennett that found that telephone reminders increase the likelihood of keeping first appointments. The evidence wasn't graded. I didn't see direct evidence, you know, looking at this intervention and its outcome in improving substance use disorder outcomes.
Can I add to that, Tammy?
Yeah, sure.
I just wanted to add on that particular one. The evidence is generally that I've seen is related to other kinds of conditions, not necessarily substance use.
Yes.
We don't have the evidence yet in substance use. There are some people working on it.
I think we have some, I just want to ask, and maybe Eric can jump in. I think we have some of that evidence on follow-up in relation to tobacco dependence.
Yeah, we have tobacco, but we also have it with regard to other conditions like diabetes and other chronic conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that transfers is another question.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, my second concern had to do with the fact that in terms of net benefits, they cite the U.S. Preventive Services Task Force indicating no harms were found in screening or behavioral health interventions for alcohol misuse. I guess I was a little concerned about the harms of, contacting someone post-discharge who may, have some privacy concerns around the substance use admission. There was an issue about feasibility. To quote, they say, during the pilot test, it became clear that implementation of follow-up measure was difficult to achieve for a variety of reasons. It had to be done by hospital employees. It must be done by phone or discharge clinic visit. The TAP and staff agreed that it was necessary to allow more flexibility in final specifications. So it could necessarily not have to be done by the hospital staff, but could be done from contract service.
That was my biggest concern.
Yeah. So there's some, and then you get a letter saying, again, raising the privacy issues. Those are my three.
Yeah.
Sure.
Mady, do you have any additional comments before we move on to the specific criterion? Or do you want to just?
No. Go ahead.
Okay. Great. All right, so we'll move on to the evidence and importance. So whether or not this measure was important to measure and report, it was almost unanimous that this was an important area to measure and report. I don't know, Mady or Tammy or anyone else, do you have any additional comments around? I know you spoke a bit about the evidence, but is there anything else regarding the importance or additional pieces about the evidence
not
you wanted to add?
Not about the importance. It's important.
No, it's important.
Did the developer want to say anything about the concern that they mentioned about the evidence, how it was more related to other conditions?
No. Eric, do you have anything you'd like to say?
I think this is a measure where we're trying to do two things with one measure. which you can see in the inclusion criteria, so that those persons who are identified at high risk for alcohol use are being followed up, as are those people who are dependent or who have a substance use disorder who are being followed up. So I think the evidence splits along both lines. The evidence on the follow-up comes from work on screening brief intervention, which finds that a second contact, which could include a telephone contact, increases the effectiveness of the intervention over a single contact.
Yeah, that's true.
So that was the evidence base for that. For the follow-up with treatment, there I think we were more going with best practices and with analog to other conditions. And perhaps, Nancy, you might want to talk a little bit about the differentiation that we are suggesting go into the follow-up data gathering?
In the revised measure?
Yes.
Okay, I guess I have a question for all of you in the measure that you actually reviewed. I'm not sure whether you received the most recent version of the measure. Just before these were to be handed out to you all, they did, NQF opened up the site so that I could put in the revisions that we're going to make to this measure beginning in January 1st, 2013. Currently, the measure is the patient is to be contacted within 30 days from the point of discharge, and we've changed that. We've made several changes. We've changed that to within 7 to 30 days, and that's because we defined a what we call a quit, or you've quit using or whatever, as being free for at least the 7 days prior to the point in time which someone is talking to you. So if you contacted the person early on in this process, you know, you never would get any information about whether or not they quit or not, because, you know, you're just contacting them too soon. That's the first step. So we changed the time frame for contact, and then the original version of the measure only calculates on the fact that the patient was contacted, and the use status and compliance with treatment program doesn't play a part in the calculation of the measure at all, and we really wanted to change that. And so we have replaced the current data element for alcohol status post-discharge with four new data elements that are much, much easier. The old one had, you know, 14, 15 allowable values and probably more than that, and it was very complex, but it didn't play a part in the calculation. Now, with the four new data elements, we want to know really three things. You know, is the patient, if he was given medication, is he taking that medication? And if they were referred to treatment, are they going to the outpatient counseling? And then thirdly, if they have an alcohol dependence issue, you know, well, not that or misuse, what is the current use at this time for alcohol, and then what is the current use for drugs, if they were using drugs. And so we'll get information on the compliance with the treatment program, as well as status. And then how that plays into the calculation of the measure is that the patient has to be contacted within the appropriate point in time, and the hospital must collect the data on all of those data elements, or they don't pass the measure. So the crux of it is, and you know, we can't hold the hospital accountable for whether or not the patient is complying with treatment are going to the outpatient addictions treatment or taking his meds or really with the youth status. But we do want to hold the hospital accountable for at least collecting that information. And, you know, I think it's kind of like our first step into trying to move this more to a true outcome measure. Hopefully in the future we'll be able to begin to, when we get more experience with this, to begin to collect some true outcome data relative to this measure. So that's where we're headed for January 1st, 2013.
Any questions for Nancy about the revisions and the measures?
I actually just am looking at the form right now. The one that is up on the screen is actually not the one that has been modified.
Okay.
So just to make sure that you have received the proper and updated measure, I will be emailing that out to you all today, later today, just to ensure that we're all on the same page.
There's the measure, and also the data dictionary will include those four new data elements as well, so you can read about those data elements, and you'll see the calculation algorithm. So the algorithm is a little difficult to understand, but there are some, they're not flags, they're counters that we put on them so that we know that you have addressed all of the data elements that need to be addressed in order to pass the measure.
The reason I suggested, this is Eric, that I suggested that Nancy describe this is that the measure that you see is a process measure, which the committee and the Joint Commission see as kind of an intermediate measure to gathering outcome data. So the NQF, in an earlier behavioral measures panel, had approved a depression follow-up measure that was depression assessed within 6 weeks following initiation of treatment with antidepressant medications or counseling. That was an intermediate measure to the measurement of has there been a 50% or more change in symptomatology as measured by that follow-up measure. And so what the committee's orientation to this measure is, you have to have data collection in place in order to be able to assess the outcome. So the process measure itself is admittedly a fairly weak one on the basis of evidence of what's the evidence that doing a follow-up within 30 days improves outcomes for patients with dependence. That's in the context of where we're really going is, are they in treatment, are they reducing, or have they stopped drinking or drugging, and are they taking medications?
Right, and I think that we'll be able to get there, you know, Eric, in a point in time, and, you know, these are our steps, our beginning steps to get to that point in time. I mean, we're all very excited about this, and we think that it is a good measure, and it's really going to help us to understand more about how the patients are really doing in relationship to the treatment that has been provided to them.
You know, I think those are all excellent points. I think that the concern that was raised about privacy and ethical concerns is one that we can't discount totally because of the weakness of the evidence in this area, which truly we haven't adequately explored in order to have a body of evidence that's strong. But when this does come up in the large group, I hope we can revisit the points that were made by Tammy and Mady around that.
Thank you very much, everyone. Just in the interest of time, was there any major issues around the scientific acceptability, including reliability and validity, usability or feasibility, that Tammy and Mady haven't brought up yet, or if you would like to add anything on to what you've already mentioned?
And keep in mind, we're going to be reviewing all of this, you know, more in depth at the in-person meeting. Okay. Then we'll get that new measure out to you as soon as we can, or later on today. So we'll move on to the last measure for today that's under review, which is 0004, initiation engagement of alcohol and other drug dependence treatment. Madeline, I believe that you were in charge of reviewing that measure.
Michael and I were. I don't know. Is Michael on the line?
I don't believe Michael's on the line right now, actually. I don't think he could make
This is a process quality measure put forth by the National Committee for Quality Assurance, really looking at access to treatment. We look at a new episode of alcohol or other drug dependence being identified, and then we want to try to measure initiation of treatment, which would have to occur within 14 days of the diagnosis, and engagement, which would be defined as two or more additional services received under the diagnosis of alcohol or other drug would be abuse or dependence, right, since we're dealing with diagnoses here. I think that this is, within the HEDIS system, pretty dependable, and I would have to say, not being a health services researcher, I think a means of really following the process quality measures and patient outcomes on a number of other fronts. The concerns that I had about it were less about things like the need. Obviously, it's high. The performance gap is high. Looking at the evidence, we have the evidence of the use of this measure over time, and I would be interested in hearing people's thoughts about that. This was examined in terms of both initiation and engagement within the public and commercial systems. I think that for me, the feasibility, usability issues remain, especially in institutions that are not yet moved over to electronic health records. How do they actually participate? And maybe Eric can help with this, with HEDIS generally, if we don't have compliance with the EHR. Does anybody know?
I believe there have been a variety of ways of getting around the whole issue of electronic health records with regard to initiation and engagement. I know in the public sector research that was done on this measure or these combined measures, they were able to get the data.
Good.
Despite the problems we're having with electronic health records and with getting that level of data.
Yes. Thank you, Mady. And that would reinforce my points that I feel that this is at an acceptable level of precision that we can endorse this measure. I'd love to hear other people's ideas about that, other points.
Needless to say, I agree.
Thank you.
Hi, this is David Pating. So I just want to tell you, I'm still struggling. I very strongly like the HEDIS direction, but I struggle with the actual measure itself. The devil's in the details. And my system, we found that 50% of our diagnoses are, and this is like thousands, 20, 30,000 diagnoses, you know, people, individuals being were just have abuse. And the other half have dependents, and we just don't feel that it runs counter to the ESPRT implementation because it says that you should screen and do brief intervention, and the other end it says that it mandates a referral. So I think that there's some conflicting values here where some of our national indicators don't line up properly because some of our diagnoses that sort of indexes are unclear.
But I think in most of the recommendations for ESPRT is not recommended when alcohol abuse or dependence is clearly a diagnosis. It's
Esperit has the best outcomes with risky drinking. So one of the things which seems to be, that you seem to be describing in your system, David, is confusion about where the appropriate place for the Esperit intervention would be.
If you fill with alcohol with some sort of any consequence, is that, you know, that's sort of like the classic Larry, you know, Gentinello kind of thing where you give them you dress the trauma and somebody comes in and provides Esperit.
But I think that is not, if you look at the literature in terms of how, and things have been presented here in Seitz's work, that is a dependence and abuse are a rule out. Referral to treatment, then, is the dominant mode of intervention. Screening and referral to treatment, even bypassing a brief intervention.
Well, but then already with the abuse, if you're saying you're going to rule out, with the HEDIS, you're already committing that one abuse referral to an engagement, to two additional sessions of engagement, because it's initiation and then engagement.
So this is an inpatient alcohol or drug admission, an outpatient visit?
Outpatient. HEDIS is only outpatient.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I think it clarifies a little bit what we're trying to deal with here. I think you're raising some good points.
Yeah. For dependents, it makes perfect sense. All dependents need to go be seen in specialty care and then not only get initiated but engaged. But I think there's a question about the assumption that all abuse needs specialty referral, particularly if a primary care doctor can, you know, it feels very comfortable with making those interventions. Or whether it's it requires, you know, that counts as an index, whether it really still counts requires the extra two engagement follow-ups.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I see where you're going.
Yeah.
You're saying all abuse should be evaluated. I don't disagree with that. With a Esperit program that's full, that evaluation can actually be done in primary care. If you raise your primary care staff, because I think it actually works against the primary care integration strategies that we're trying to implement for again, abuse, low-level abuse, which...
Wait a minute. David, what if engagement could occur in primary care? What if we end up with a more integrated system where you do identify and then you initiate with brief counseling or brief treatment, or whatever it ends up being called, in primary care setting?
Well, that's where the billing codes don't quite work out when you get down to the auditing level.
I understand that that's a usability issue.
Yeah.
But
I'm
talking about initiation and engagement being able to occur in a primary care setting.
That would be great. Yeah, that would be great. But I just want to say that there's still issues, I think, with... HEDIS is a great concept, but then when we get down to these implementation issues,
you do have those. And you're right about the billing issues.
Yes. So I'm wondering if, in fact, we went ahead with attempting to, if this measure were in place, it would sort of force some more definitive clarification of all those issues. In other words, would improve with more precise implementation and use follow from the application of this measure?
I believe we have the developer on the call. Is there someone from NCQA who would like to make a comment?
Sure. This is Bob Rem. I'm the Assistant Vice President for Performance Measurement. And Jeremy Gottlich is our team leader on our behavioral health measures. And again, the question was specifically
around the distinction between abuse and dependence, and how it can be greater provided for or more precisely addressed in the measure.
Right. Just before Jeremy responds more technically, you know, this is a broad population measure focused on health plans and their ability to help improve both provider performance and also patient engagement. And so from that context, we do have a broad definition as has been articulated. And so from that vantage point, from the purpose of the measure intent, there are advantages to that broader, if you will, circle that we're drawing around a patient population. Jeremy, who participates in our measurement advisory panels, our behavioral health measurement advisory panels, can speak to getting it more detailed maybe downstream.
Thanks, Bob. And that was a great summary. I would only add that this came up, the issue of abuse versus dependence, in our reevaluation of this measure, which actually is occurring right now. We met with our behavioral health group in December of 2011, and this measure was approved to go forward in the next HEDIS publication as it is. We did, and we continue to talk about the new ICD-10 coding, which will structure these codes by use, abuse, and dependence. And that issue will go to our behavioral health expert panel actually this week. And so that's where we'll have the forum to see if these measures can be more specific, more precise in their coding.
Because one of the issues, that was identified in the previous use of this measure is that it didn't move, and part of the reason, it seems, at least one of the reasons, that it may not have moved is precisely this issue.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm glad it's going to come in for some discussion. I mean, the measure may not move because so many people are diagnosed with abuse that it isn't relevant in some fashion.
Yeah.
So thanks, Jeremy. Will you be able to feed that information back to us when you complete your discussions, or will it be?
Yeah, just in terms of our measure development cycle, our discussions with the measurement advisory panel around ICD-10 codes would be for the following year, 2014.
Right, when the ICD-10 would be implemented in all of our HEDIS
right.
measures.
So currently, the measure was recently approved and then supported by CPM for inclusion in next year's HEDIS data set. So again, we'd be looking at making recommendations around ICD-10 later this year for potential inclusion, what we refer to as HEDIS 2015, which is the next opening cycle.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, we would, you know, if and when that happened, then we would articulate those either in a measure update, which we do annually, and then NQF would take a look and see whether that's simply an update issue, whether it needed an ad hoc review or some other level of review. But yes, obviously we would share that immediately.
I will add that we do have a public comment period for ICD-10 coding specifically, and I believe that opens up in the next month or so. And so we can make the committee aware of when that opens and how to access the materials. So if you wanted to provide feedback on the coding and precision, you'd be more than welcome to.
Thank you very much.
All very helpful. Thank you.
Just in the interest of time, it looks like we have about 4 minutes left. If there's any lingering questions or comments you want to make prior to the April 17th and 18th meeting, if it's brief, you can do so now. If not, feel free to email me. I can pass it along to any of the measure developers, and surely we can get into greater discussion of this measure during that in-person meeting. Is there any last comments anyone would like to make about this measure?
And my only comment is I wrestle with whether the numerator should include mental health treatment as well as substance
use
treatment, given the you know the fluidity of those diagnoses and the you know the stigma issue and the coding payment issues. So I'll just throw that quickly out there.
Okay, mm-hmm. We'll make a note of all that to bring it up at the meeting.
Right.
Any others?
I this is the first time I have worked with this group. This is Madeline. I just wanted to say that it was a pleasure, and I look forward to meeting people when we all come together in April.
Yes, and this is Sarah. I just wanted to echo what Madeline said. This is our first work group, and I think it went very smoothly. I just want to thank all of you. I know all of you are extremely busy, but for taking the time to fill in those evaluations, taking the time to have this discussion today, I think that it will all be extremely useful when we meet with a larger group to have you represent these measures in addition to the measure developers. I think you all did a great job. And just again, we're having the other two work group calls on April 9th. It's going to be kind of a marathon day for us because we're meeting with both those work groups. I believe I already sent out the agendas for those two calls. If you want to listen in, feel free. If not, we'll have the meeting transcripts and recordings that we can send to you prior to the April meeting if you want to review it. And again, the meeting is April 17th and 18th. And if you've had any trouble booking anything or any logistical questions, feel free. Again, this is Sarah. Just email me about anything. And just thanks, everyone, so much. I hope you have a great day. We'll give you 2 minutes back of your day.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.